Now in our study today, we're going to look at another section of Hebrews chapter 12. In our last study, we considered the opening three verses, and that we called the Christian race. Now we're going to look verses 4 through 14. This we shall term the chastening rod. Let me read now these verses. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastening, whereof all are partakers, then are ye illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh, which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits, and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees. Make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men, and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. I'm sure God will bless to us the reading of his own word. As I have indicated in this section, we're dealing now with the chastening rod. Now, in connection with the truth of divine chastening, one should learn to understand the true meaning of chastening and the object in view. There may be quite a number of purposes for chastisement. For example, now, chastisement could be illuminative, that is, to discover fault and failings. Listen to this quotation: I speak not with your children which have not known, and which have not seen the chastisement. That's quoted from Deuteronomy chapter 11 verse 2. That would be illuminative. But then there is another form of chastisement, or another purpose for it, and that is, it could be preventative, to keep from failure and self-exaltation. Listen to this: God hath seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked, that is, chastened thee yesternight. That's taken from Genesis 31 verse 42. It is in connection with Jacob and his father-in-law, and when he had to face him up regarding a certain matter, then he's reminding his father-in-law how God intervened in order to prevent him from doing anything that was wrong to Jacob. Now, here is another quotation from Proverbs 31, verse 1. To cause us to know his way and will, the prophecy his mother taught him. That, I suggest, is instructive. Then here is one which may be curative. to prevent us from failing where we have failed before. Listen to this. Behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Thus she was reproved. That's Genesis chapter 20, verse 16. It had to do with Sarah. Then here is an aspect of chastisement which is corrective, to drive away that which is not helpful. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. That's quoted from Proverbs 22, verse 15. Here is one, perhaps, which is illustrative, that is, to let others see the divine grace and patience exemplified in us. The quotation is, "Happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty." That's taken from the book of Job, chapter 5, verse 17. Then there is that aspect of chastisement which may be punitive, to punish us for misdeed or for disobedience. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 5 reads like this, "To deliver such an one unto Satan." Now then, I have read these to you, these quotations, to show that there may be a variety of purposes why chastening is brought upon us. But let me condense these into three, perhaps, that will be easy to remember, and then we can illustrate them. Chastisement may be retributive. That is, we are chastened because of sin that we have committed, and it comes like punishment. Retributive chastisement. Now, an illustration of that would be David in the Old Testament. David sinned. We all know that David sinned. It's common knowledge. It's recorded in the Bible. And you will remember that David was severely chastened for it, and the sword never departed from David's house. He had to bear the brunt of his error to his very last. That is, it was retributive. But then there's another aspect of chastisement which is educational, that is, to teach us. Take now as an example of this, that man in the Old Testament called Job. You remember what he passed through, and you've heard of the patience, the endurance of Job. While he was passing through his time of trial, he didn't understand it, but afterwards, when it was all past and he looked back on it, he was able to give God thanks. He was educated. He was taught things in the midst of his trial that otherwise he could never have learned. It was educational. But then there's another aspect of chastisement. That is, it is preventive. For instance, the great Apostle Paul said that while he had been lifted up, carried up, as it were, into the third heaven, and he heard things that he couldn't utter, and he saw things he couldn't tell about, there was always the possibility that because of these things and the revelations he received, that he might become lifted up with pride. So lest he should be lifted up with pride, to prevent that, there was given to him the thorn in the flesh. That kept him humble. It prevented him from being lifted up with pride. Now then, I mention these three particular aspects of chastisement so that we should be able to apply them in our own lives. If we are chastised, is it retributive because of something we've done wrong? Is it educational in that we're being trained or taught something that otherwise we could never have learned? Or is it preventive? Is it to prevent us from going into sin, or from doing something that would be wrong, something that would grieve our Father in heaven? And so therefore, he chastises us. Now, as we come back now to the verses we have read to you in the Hebrews, there are three things we should mention and take note of. First of all, then, there is the existence of chastening. It's not a myth. It's not something you dream about. It's an actual experience, being chastened. And then the second thing we must take note of is the exercise concerning it. Does it really exercise us? And the last thing we'll note is the exhortations concerning it. First of all, then, the existence of chastening. He says here, "Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin." If you're striving against sin, you realize this now. We've been pointing out in the earlier verses of this chapter how one was in the Christian race. And in the Christian race, you're striving. And you're going on with your eyes set on the goal, on the winning post. And you're striving. But there's opposition against you. Things holding you back. The winds of adversity against you. But he says, "Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin." There's the existence of chastening, things that are against us. But then after that, he says, "Have ye forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children? My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord." Now, who is it that is chastened? It's the members of the family. Children in the family, if you like, or sons in the family. It may be that quite a number of my listeners today are family people. That is, it may be you're a mother, or you are a father, and you have raised your children. Now, isn't it true that as you were raising your children, if they did something that was wrong, then you were perfectly justified in chastening them, giving them their chastisement? But then it was not your place to chastise other people's children. It may be many a time you felt you would like to do it, and you felt you could do it, but you realized it was not your prerogative. The only people that you could deal with in giving chastisement were those who were members of your own family. It's a family affair. That's exactly what he's saying here. "And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him." So therefore, it's those who are in the family. If you are a Christian, you've been born again, you're constituted a member of God's family, and you're justified when you pray in saying, "Our Father, which art in heaven," and you recognize that you are a child in God's family. Now, I think you're aware of this, that I do not subscribe to this erroneous teaching that's abroad today that we're all God's children and that we're all going to the same heaven. You're going your way, I'm going my way, but we'll all get there some way or another. No, my friend, I do not subscribe to that kind of erroneous teaching. I believe there are those today who are the children of God by the new birth. And if you have not been born into God's family, you're not one of his children at all. You're one of his creatures by creation. That's perfectly true, but not one in the spiritual family. But it's those who are in the spiritual family that he is prepared to chastise in order to correct them and teach them and prevent them from doing things that are wrong. Now, notice then the method that is adopted in chastening. It says, "For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth." Whom the Lord loveth. Now, you know, that's a very difficult thing to understand. If a parent loves a child, will that parent chastise that child? Of course they will. A friend of mine who was a member in a city police force once told me that when he was a young boy, many a time he kicked over the traces, he did things that were wrong, and his father used to take him into the room, make him bend over the chair, and give him one or two with the switch. And then he would say to him, "My boy, it hurts me to do this." And he said he could never understand how it hurt his daddy, but he says he knew how it hurt him. But when he grew up to be a man and raised his own family, then he understood his father's language when he said, "It hurts me to do this." But you see, his father loved him. His father wanted him to do the right thing. His father was correcting him. He was educating him, teaching him. Now notice, it's whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. My friend, if God has chastened you at any time, it's because he loves you. It's not because God is your enemy. It's because he loves you, and he wants to correct you. He wants you to do the right thing. Whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. And then watch the manner in which he chasteneth. He says, "For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth." That sounds very hard, but you see, God knows best. God will not lay upon us anything more than we deserve. He will not lay upon us any more than we're able to carry. He knows just exactly how much we're able to carry. But he scourges every son. And now, again, I want you to notice, he tells us something here, that if we're without chastisement, if we're without chastisement, then we're not members of his family at all. That's what that verse says. If ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye illegitimate and not sons. That, to me, is a very solemn issue. My friend, if God has never dealt with you in correcting you or chastising you, it's because you're not one of his family. Is that serious? Does it make you think? So you see, there is the existence of chastening, and you must consider it. And if God chastens us, it's for our benefit. Now then, when chastening comes, there should be an exercise concerning it. Do not despise chastening, or else you will suffer loss. Do not faint under chastening, or else the end in view will be missed. Be in subjection to it, be exercised by it, and the benefits will be gained. You see, if we're going to think of it, no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous. That's perfectly true, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Now, I ask you, in all fairness, if a child is chastened by the parents, is the child exercised thereby? Now, if that child despises the chastening, that child will suffer loss. It'll have no effect on him. It used to be, a few years ago, that teachers in the school were allowed to chastise children who broke the rules in school. I have been told that that is not allowed now. Well, I'm not the one that decides these things, but I know this. If children cannot be chastised in school, don't let us complain about the standard of education going down. And then if policemen and officers of the law are not allowed to deal with children when they find them breaking the law, and if the children are even taken to court and there's not much can be done about it, I tell you this, my friend, don't complain if children go continually breaking the law. I heard about one young boy who was taken to court and charged, and when he got home, the other boys gathered round him, and they wanted to know how he got on. He seemed to be a great hero, and he spoke of the judge as that old man. And he said, "Oh, that old man who tried me. Oh, he just looked and he laughed at me." "Oh, yes, did he?" And then he began to say some things about the old man. And my friend, a boy like that is not going to make it. You see, if he's not going to show respect to the law and respect to those who represent the law, you can understand that that boy is going to go on breaking the law. So therefore, if we despise chastening, we will suffer loss. But let us bring that over now into the spiritual family. You're a Christian. You profess to be one of God's children. If God puts his finger on you in chastisement, will you be exercised thereby? Will you say to yourself, "Well, now I've done it once, and God really has whipped me, I certainly will not do this again"? Now, we do not faint under chastening, or else the end in view will be missed. You've not to faint under it at all. You've to stand up to it. You know, the great Apostle Paul, he was scourged when he was in prison, and he hadn't broken the law at all. He was an innocent man, and the law gave him 39 stripes of the Roman birch, and he stood up under it. But then now I'm thinking of another aspect of things here. It is God who is doing this. God is chastising us in order to mold us and make us the people he wants us to be. And no, when we're growing up, we need to be disciplined and sometimes chastised in order to make us become the young men and the young women that will be an honor to their parents and a credit to them. So therefore, in God's family, we've not to faint under the chastening, or else the end in view will be missed. But we've to be in subjection to it. We've to be exercised by it. And if we're exercised by it, then we shall gain some of the benefits intended for us. Now, in view of this, here are some things we can do. There are exhortations concerning it. For instance, now, there is to be a measure of cheerfulness. He said this: "No chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees. Make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed." You see, the whole thing is this. There's not to be that measure of grieving. We've not to grieve for it. But then there's to be a measure of joy, and we've to lift up the hands that hang down. Now, if some people are letting their hands hang down, it's because they've lost the joy. Now we've to come and help them, and there's to be a measure of cheerfulness in seeking to help those. And if we've been exercised, therefore we'll carry out these exhortations and we'll help to lift up the hands that hang down. Then there's to be carefulness. We've to make straight paths for our feet. You know, we're thinking of the feet here, but today you usually think of driving along the highways, but sometimes you run into the potholes and you get into trouble. Likewise, when people walked on the roads, if their feet slipped off the path, then again they were in danger. So he says, make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way. So therefore, we have to be very careful in preparing the path. Then again, there's to be peacefulness. Follow after peace with all men. That's verse 14. Follow peace with all men. So in the midst of your chastisement and your exercise thereby, don't be angry with God. Don't be angry with other people, but try to follow peace. Follow after peace with all men. There will be peacefulness. And then, not only so, there's something else associated with peace. Follow peace and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Notice then the exhortations. In the midst of it all, there's to be cheerfulness. There's to be carefulness. There's to be peacefulness. And there is to be holiness. So we've been looking today now at the chastening rod. I trust that we all will be exercised thereby. This is Mr. McNeil bidding you good day.